All right, everybody, welcome to Talking Taker, episode
you are, ready.
29. Oh, we're ready. We're doing it, man. My name is Alex Dorio. Oh,
we're live, buddy.
We're live, let's pal. Go back. No way. We're live.
Sid Vicious.
What is going on there? In celebration of Psycho Sid, main event run at this pay-per-view. This is Talking Taker, episode 29, our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. We appreciate you joining us along the ride for another round of Dead Man Talking. My name is Alex Dorio. I already said that. I'm one of your co-hosts and creatures of the night. And of course, I'm joined by the man you heard talking in the background, Travis White. And as you said right before we started this, it's time.
It's time. It's Vader's not on this card, but it's time. Oh, Vader, man. What a great guy in WCW. His WWF run leaves a lot to be desired, man.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
One of the all-time disappointments, I would say.
Yeah, seriously. Sure. I loved him in WCW. Him and Sting, him and Cactus, him and... Oh, just everything, man. It's so great. Him and Flair. Or not Flair, but Ricky Steamboat, I think it was. All that stuff is fantastic. But yeah, WWF did not know how to handle him. But he's supposed to be the main event here on In Your House. It's time. But he's not.
No, he's not. And this match that we're going to cover certainly does not deserve to be in the main event either. It's not in the main event. It would not be a main event anywhere. I mean...
In history.
What did I just watch, man? What was this?
Bro, I don't know. I got so much to say, and that's not a good thing. Like, I have almost...
It's a great song,
...as though. Many notes on this match. Huh? Yeah, absolutely. I have almost as many notes for this match as I do, like, the Buried Alive match, which was really long and a lot to talk about in a good way. But this one is not that. But I still have a ton of notes, just because I have no idea what I just watched. I have no clue.
It's gotta go...
I had to watch it twice. It's so bad.
I think it goes on the Mount Rushmore of Undertaker stinkers, along with the Rest in Peace match and the Final Curtain match and the first, last, and only, as far as I can tell, Armageddon Rules match of the Undertaker's career against the Executioner here at the December 1996 In Your House, It's Time pay-per-view.
Yeah, December 15th, 1996. Speaking of Mount Rushmore, I got a little knowledge I'd like to drop on you.
Drop it.
Here. So, Terry Gordy, who plays the legendary, you know, one of the Fabulous Freebirds, one of the greatest wrestling tag teams, factions of all time. There'd probably be no Stone Cold Steve Austin if there were no Fabulous Freebirds. He loves those guys. Anyway, Terry Gordy, those of you who haven't been listening or don't know, he's the Executioner here. His birthday is April 23rd, as is John Cena's, as is William Shakespeare's, as is me. That's your Mount Rushmore. Your Mount Rushmore of April 23rd. I'm just kidding. I take myself off of it.
I thought you were going to take Shakespeare off.
No way.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. He has nothing to do with wrestling. Although, Undertaker does the Shakespeare pose, you keep calling it. So, bringing on back to Undertaker here. So, yeah.
Anyway, fun fact for you, everybody. And we'll definitely be celebrating your birthday on here in a few weeks. I wonder what match will fall that week. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Hope you get a good present.
I'm going to be surprised. I hope so. I hope it's not something like this. It'll be 97, so it'll be good.
Yeah, but, hopefully. Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about 1997 here towards the end, but we got to wrap up 1996 first, and we're going to wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Christmas present. Put on a bow on it.
Yeah, a little coal in the stocking.
This is one of those re-gift presents.
Or that.
Present you give to somebody you don't like, and you give it away to somebody else that you really don't like that much. That's what this present is. Again, December of 96, this is the World Wrestling Federation's Christmas present to us for a great start to the year for The Undertaker in 96. Some good matches, a wonderful long-form storytelling between Mankind and him, with Goldust, you know, chopping it up in between. And then... You got this lump of coal at the end of the year and just talking about the Executioner. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, 1996 definitely has had its highs and lows. We had the Bret Hart match, the Diesel match. Both of those were really good. And, of course, the Mankind feud has been I think unquestionably the most exciting, best thing we've seen along this journey through the Undertaker's career. Definitely some of the best matches. That King of the Ring 96 match was incredible. Boiler Room Brawl was pretty special. Buried Alive was very fun and unique. And then, you know, we also had the Gold Dust feud, which led to three pretty not so great matches. We had this Survivor Series match just this past last week, and now we're getting to this match. We keep avoiding talking about it like we tend to do with these bad matches. But let's talk about the build-up real quick. I would actually say if you're going to watch anything related to this match, there's a couple of really good matches in the build-up. Build-up is a lot better than the actual match itself here. And kind of starts off on Raw 185 on the WWE Network. I think it's the night after Survivor Series.
Is that the one after Survivor Series?
Yeah, yeah. It opens up with something really cool. They call it a Tough Man Contest between Mankind and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And basically, it's two heels facing each other. But they call it a tough guy fight. I thought it was a really cool idea, something a little bit different way to sell that. And it's a really unique match. They actually end up, I've been going through the next set of Raws going into Royal Rumble, and they actually do a couple more of these. They have Stone Cold and Vader fight, and then they have Mankind and Owen Hart fight, and they call them Tough Man battles every time.
Just because they're heel versus heel?
Yeah, so it was kind of different, kind of unique, and I would actually definitely go out of my way to watch this if I was anybody out there listening. It was really cool.
Yeah. The match is good, too. Again, it's just the precursor of what's to come in the next several years as, you know, Mick Foley and all of his various characters will feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, but that match ends in DQ when the Executioner interferes, right? At the end of it, I think he comes in and starts attacking Steve Austin. And then Undertaker comes out, which is kind of strange. He's a babyface, but everybody's a heel in the match. But he comes out to kind of save Stone Cold, almost. Maybe not really to save him, but to get his hands on Executioner and Mankind. And he takes him out, but then Austin clotheslines him over the top rope. But good, he lands on his feet because he's got that magical Undertaker power. But he lands on his feet, but then they have this stare off. They kind of stare at each other. It's pretty cool. You know, we've seen him wrestle twice on Raw, I believe, at this point, but with two good matches. But this is, again, just kind of setting the seeds for what we know. Again, in hindsight, we can look back and see all this and how this plays up into 97, 98, you know, and the years to come. But pretty cool little stare off there, you know. From the Pirate Taker and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Really subtle, bit of a tease towards a match we would see. We're going to get to in 1997, and we're going to get to many more times after that. So that was really fun, little way to build that. And you can kind of already tell that this Executioner feud is just a stopgap, really, to get to bigger and better things. They're already teasing this thing with Stone Cold. So the next week, Raw 186, we get another barn burner of a match as Freddie Joe Floyd continues his feud with Paul Bearer's faction. You know, he's been fighting Mankind a couple times, and now he's going to go head-to-head with the Executioner and the Executioner's Monday Night Raw debut. The Executioner's music here just kind of blends in with Mankind's music and Stone Cold's old music and half the other music on the roster at this time. You know, Jim Johnston created some really awesome music, and he made some really garbage theme music too.
It's true. Around this time. It's like he used the same like font, or, you know, like not font, but the same like whatever Pro Tools or however he was using it back then, you know. But he's the same, like, he's just on this kick of like I want this organ kind of piano-y light, airy music. And you could have interchanged those four guys and they're not knowing who's coming out, you know. It's just crazy. But Freddie Joe Floyd versus Executioner, and it's during this match that we find out, as the viewer, it's announced on commentary that the Undertaker versus Executioner in an Armageddon rules match, one time only, I believe. This is only
Time they've done a couple matches like this, but I think it's the only time I ever called it an Armageddon rules match. And it basically, it's a version of a last man standing match, pretty much, except that there are going to be falls in between. Sort of Crush and Macho Man Randy Savage had a match like this at WrestleMania 10, so it's pretty similar to that match if anyone out there's ever seen that. But there's going to be pinfalls, and after the pinfall, the wrestler is going to have a chance to answer the 10 count. And if they can, then the match continues. And if not, then the match is over. So basically just a modified last man standing match.
Yeah. No DQ, no submissions, unlimited number of falls. Like you said, no count outs. But yeah, pinfalls. But then, yeah, you still have to get up after 10 seconds if you don't. So yeah, you got to sit down for a 13 count, I guess. So three is not enough.
Man, that would have made sense with Undertaker. Could have had an unlucky 13.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, that would have been great. But I do believe on that Pritchard podcast when they talked about this match, he mentioned this is a form of like a Texas death match. They used to have like Terry Funk and those guys used to have in world class. So yeah, but although I do want to say in this match on this Raw, we're talking a lot more about this Freddie Joe Floyd match. I thought we would, but this is where Executioner uses his finisher, which is an Asian spike. And for those of you younger listeners, you might remember Umaga. It's basically the same thing. His thumb's not taped up or anything, but he pulls his thumb up and he just jabs it into their carotid artery, basically, in their neck. But they call it an Asian spike, and as the weeks go on, they call it an Asiatic spike. I'm not sure what the difference is, but what a freaking lame finish for this guy.
I'm pretty sure Vince just misspoke. I think it was supposed to be the Asiatic spike, and he just accidentally said the Asian spike in there.
Calls it an Asian. I rewound it to make sure, because I knew it was called an Asiatic spike, but he calls it an Asian spike here, and I was like, what? So, yeah, but it's
lame,
so lame.
But I'm kind of a mark for old, kind of cheesy finishers like the Iron Claw. And
I love when Umaga did it, but I don't like the just
his execution.
For this story, exactly. I don't like his execution in this match. It's not excellently executed. So,
well, he does do the bar symbol before he does the Asian spike, sticks the thumbs in the middle out
in the middle.
To the crowd.
That's true.
So that's probably where they got it from. I'm definitely 100% sure. Speaking of the Freebirds, I put this on, I think I put it on Instagram or Twitter or something a couple weeks ago as I was watching this, but here we see in this match, I believe this is the only time the Freebirds ever appeared together on screen in the WWF, because Terry Gordy is wrestling in this match, and in the middle of it, there's a split-screen interview with Doc Hendricks, cutting a promo, doing an interview with somebody. So on TV, you've got Doc Hendricks, a.k.a. Michael Hayes, and you've got the Executioner, Terry Gordy, on screen at the same time together. I think it's the only time in WWF history the Freebirds appeared on WWF TV, Monday Night Raw, anything like that. So,
that's wrong.
There for you.
Did they not make it to WWF in like the 80s at all?
I don't think they're on
TV. I don't remember. Yeah, I think they were there for like a cup of coffee. I don't think they were on TV though either. Yeah, I think you're right. So, yeah, that's pretty neat. Again, it's not even as the Freebird characters. It's Doc Hendricks and the Executioner.
Which apparently, they talk on Pritchard podcast. Vince just hated the Freebirds, and he didn't want Michael Hayes. He didn't want Terry Gordy. He had to dress them up into different things.
Get a haircut.
Get a haircut.
Shave the mustache or shave the beard off for Doc. That's a cool little piece of trivia there. So.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting as I was watching it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
That's about it. That's about all that's interesting about this.
There's nothing on the next week of Raw unless you need to keep up with the brackets for the Karate Fighters tournament this year. but so other than that, you can move on to Raw 188, which has had something really cool. I didn't even remember this match.
Is this December 9th with the – it's I know where we're headed. So, yeah, this is December 9th. It starts out with a video recapping the whole story since SummerSlam. Since SummerSlam between Mankind and the Executioner and Undertaker and stuff. So, go ahead and talk about this match that comes up, because it is neat.
Yeah, that video is great, and they're doing it because Undertaker and Mankind are going to have a match on Raw leading into In Your House It's Time, and they're going to have a no-holds-barred match.
Which should have been what Survivor Series was.
But why have an unsanctioned match and then lead into a sanctioned match, but there's no holds barred? I mean, all this it doesn't make any sense logically when you're going back and studying it like we are, but I guess it was, you know, it was whatever back then. It was just cool to see Undertaker and Mankind on free TV, you know, it's on pay-per-view every time, and now they're putting it on TV. Something really cool, they had that video package to open the show, but they also, it's the first time I remember, well, I guess not the first time, but they do specifically have a parental discretion advised warning before Raw starts, and it's not like the network thing that comes on that has parental discretion sometimes. This was from back then in 1996. So they're kind of advertising that it's going to get wild. It's going to get crazy.
It's going to get messy.
But yeah, they're advertising that, but it doesn't really, you know, it's pretty basic, but it's solid. It's a good, it's worth going to watch, but it's nothing like their pay-per-view matches.
No. If they had to move this match ahead 6 days, or I guess forward, or delayed it 6 more days for the It's Time pay-per-view, would have been great.
Yeah.
But but it's a hard-hitting, you know, a good main event. Brutal as usual. I mean, like, as far as their intensity and everything, they just take it to each other and stuff. But one of my favorite things I've ever heard in my entire life, I think you and I both know what's coming. So during Undertaker's entrance, Jim Ross says, and I quote,
I mean, that's the quote of the year for the podcast so far, unquestionably.
Oh, yeah. We're 29 episodes in, and that takes a cake. Heenan stuff was fantastic. Lawler's had some golden ones. What does that mean?
Well, like, I mean,
at what point did JR discuss that with Mankind?
JR knows Mankind better than anybody. We've learned that throughout the years. Yeah. So they don't just talk about wrestling. They talk about their innermost feelings and... all that good stuff.
I guess so. Oh man. It's so good.
Yeah, it was awesome. So watch it just for that. Undertaker wins clean. He's able to put Mankind away. So kind of, you know, this pay-per-view match is going to be the end of things, really, for this feud. But kind of putting a button on the Mankind portion of it, getting a clean win, finally, on Raw.
There are some weapon spots, too. They do use some weapons, you know. Yeah, which is good. But yeah, clean win. You're right. Tombstone again. Protecting that tombstone.
And Paul Bearer looks scared of Undertaker, but Executioner runs out after the match is over and hits the spike on Undertaker to sell you on the pay-per-view that Sunday, although it's not really the barn burner to really get you to buy the pay-per-view. And I think this is one of the most historically worst buy rates in WWF history.
I think so,
mistaken. Yeah.
But the show fades to black. I mean, the show fades to black as he's got the spike on Undertaker, you know? So that's kind of neat. It's not even the Sid and... Or is it Sid and Sean the main event? Sid and Brett. Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, it's not even that storyline that's going off the air, you know? It's to sell it, so... Yeah, it's kind of cool, you know, spot for them to be in. It's not going to last very long for Terry Gordy.
No, Undertaker's trying, man. And we're going to see that throughout the years. Undertaker tries to put new talent over all the time, and sometimes it's people like Mankind who take the ball and run with it, but Undertaker's trying with Executioner here. He tried with Sal Sincere a few weeks ago and gave him a ton of offense. You know, you can't say that Undertaker is not generous, and we can't say that Undertaker tries to bury people. He's doing his best, man, trying to get something out of Terry Gordy.
He'll bury you alive, but he won't bury you in the wrestling business.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So that leads us into the pay-per-view.
It's time.
We do get a pre-match video. Go ahead.
Oh, I want to say, before the pre-match video, there's an interview in the back with Sid Vicious, or Psycho Sid, I guess. And he's got his Billy Madison hat on, man. His hat is way back behind his head. It looks like he's in Billy Madison. I just expect him to be like, "Harry Doobie," when he's talking to the interviewer. But I just started laughing out loud. He looks just like Billy Madison.
I did
like
thought that was.
But anyway, yeah.
I thought he looked ridiculous. Yeah, looks I noticed awful. That.
It was a softball hat, I guess. So, but yeah, it's a really cool video beforehand, kind of recapping it. And but an executioner comes out, and it's like from parts unknown and with weight unknown, which I thought was a cool little touch, you know? Yeah. He hasn't registered with the athletic commission, you know, they don't have his weight or his identity or where he's from. So, but in all seriousness, I do think that's a cool, like, suspended disbelief in this guy. They don't know where he's from or anything. That's pretty neat, you know.
I do too. I mean, you never see that anymore. I can't remember the last time somebody was from parts unknown, weight unknown. You know, everybody just goes to NXT and they're from some normal town, and we know everything about them. I mean, do a video package to tell you who they really are. You never get any mystery at all. Aside from, I guess maybe Bray Wyatt would be the last person you have some sort of mystery to, something like that. But yeah, it's just so rarely done now, and it can really distinguish a guy and make him special.
Yeah,
true. As the Executioner comes out, one of the announcers talks about the vacant eyes of the Executioner, which is sad but true.
Yeah.
He's just...
That's a shoot.
You know, Terry Gordy, you can look it up on Wikipedia. He just wasn't all there at this time. He had some drug overdose problems, a lot of health problems, and he's just not the guy that he was. Terry Gordy versus The Undertaker, Terry Gordy of 1990 or something versus Undertaker of 96 would have been a barn burner, man. Would have been awesome. But it's just not the same here. So he comes out, Undertaker comes out, and he's already kind of ditched the leather. He's got more of a denim sort of look, I guess. Black denim, maybe.
No wings this time. Doesn't come down from the top. He comes down from the down the aisle, and he raises the light on the stairs again. Like we've mentioned a couple episodes ago, he's kind of changed to that rather than getting in on the top. Or the camera angle's different. Like it's down below him as he raises the lights. But yeah, he's got the teardrops too. He's got some eyeshadow, like these weird eyebrow like eyeshadow up there too. And he's got his elbow pads. But this time he's got wrist tape and hand tape too. He's got black around wrist tape and hand tape, and the little black outfit, but it's kind of like a black denim almost, like you said. It's not shiny, shimmery pirate, swashbuckler, Princess Bride, Undertaker. So, I was going to say something. They had the graphic ahead of time before the match begins, explaining all the rules. It's getting special attention, but they're also having to explain the rules because it doesn't really make sense to a normal casual fan, so... but I just want to say, man, this pay-per-view is in West Palm Beach, Florida, and the Florida Gator fans are out like, oh man, tonight. There are so many Florida Gator guys, just like typical 90s Florida Gator, like cut off like flannel shirts and jean shorts, and it's just it's hilarious to look at the guys. They all look like Bobby Budnick again from Salute Your Shorts, so that's funny.
Yeah, it's always one of the best things with these 90s WWE shows is just enjoying the crowd, man. People watching in the crowd. I was going to ask you this too. How old do you think Terry Gordy is here?
36.
So
36? Okay. Yeah, I thought he's born like 60 or 61, right? Yeah, so he's 35.
Wrestles this match like he's 60.
He does, yeah.
It's just ugly, slow. And look, we've said many times, we're not professional wrestlers.
No.
Who are we to say somebody's a bad wrestler, criticize that? But we haven't talked about this too much, but in college, we tried to become wrestlers for about a month or two.
Yeah.
We took some bumps and ran the ropes and... worked a couple practice matches at a ring out in Harlem, Georgia. And
got my butt kicked.
Oh, we did, absolutely. I've never been more sore in my life.
Nope.
But I would say, based on our limited experience, you or I probably could have had about the same sort of match that the Executioner had here in your house. It's not, I'm not trying to be cocky or bold or arrogant and saying that. That feels like that's the level of action and selling and performing that's going on here. And it's sad. It's a shame.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm glad you brought the selling because, again, Terry Gordy is, again, they're the greatest three-man team in history, I think. I mean, you got the Four Horsemen, it's four or five, including the manager. But the three-man team, you can talk about S.H.I.E.L.D. and New Day or whatever you want to. But, like, I think, the Freebirds, that three-way, the Freebird rule about them, sharing the belts, it's great. And Terry Gordy was the heavy hitter in that. Right. He was the Arn Anderson of that group, to compare to the Horsemen. He's great, but he definitely is a show. We're not crapping on Terry Gordy, the man or the wrestler, but he's definitely not in a place where he even should have been put in the ring. Like, he doesn't sell well. It really looks like it's his first time. He looks like a green guy. He looks like a 19-year-old green kid off the street because he doesn't sell. His eyes are everywhere. He's constantly putting his arms out for Irish whips. Like, you can tell, like, he's telegraphing what's coming next, and he's constantly looking at Undertaker to get the next spot call too. It's just really a really like green match, you know, with someone who actually is a seasoned vet.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to bring it up too. So I'm glad you pointed that out. It's sad. It's honestly it's sad. Like, we're not crapping on him. We're not
exactly.
You know. But it really is not fun to watch, because it's just sad.
And they clearly knew this already going into it. He had that match on Raw. He also, I watched a match on Superstars he had against Bert Centeno, great 90s jobber right there, which maybe that's why he lost. His tune-up matches were against Freddie Joe Floyd and Bert Centeno, and Taker tuned up against Mankind. I mean, that's just poor planning on the executioner's part.
That's like Paul Bearer, like having two manager. Preseason games. It's like having two preseason football games and going to the playoff, the AFC Championship.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
They clearly knew Executioner just didn't have it. So
yeah.
Basically, they're already saying before the match even began, they're basically promising outside interference in this match.
Sure.
And almost just barely a couple minutes into it, Mankind runs out to interfere, and Mankind works half the match. It just becomes a handicap match in a lot of ways. So he ends up taking a lot of the bumps and doing a lot of the wrestling instead of the executioner here.
Yeah, he does. I do want to mention this before we kind of break down the match. Does Terry Gordy resemble one of the vultures from the Robin Hood animated cartoon to you, like in his outfit? When I looked at him in his outfit, it reminded me of the little vultures from the Robin Hood animated film. I don't know why, so... They probably look, it just it looked like them to me, so
I'm gonna let you roll with that because I don't remember that at all. So
oh man, shame on you. But
I don't have kids, man. I haven't seen those Disney movies in a long time.
I'm talking about for them. I'm talking about for me. I watched that movie all the time when I was a kid. So I don't even think I'm watching it with my kids. So anyway, but Taker goes right at the executioner at the beginning, hits a ugly looking back body drop. And I do want to say this, like, so everyone knows the famous Ric Flair corner flip. Like, Ric Flair gets whipped in the corner, he flips up the turnbuckles, lands on the apron, walks toward the guy, and the guy clotheslines him. That's the spot. Everyone knows the Ric Flair corner flip. Well, Gordy tries that, basically. Do you remember the spot? Undertaker throws him into the corner, he flips up it, and then he just, like, hangs there. But, like, it's bad. Like, it really looks like a guy on Tough Enough, like, learning how to bump. He's hanging there, and you can tell Undertaker's a little frustrated, like, at him. So, but Taker's trying. I'll give it to Taker. He is trying to, like, make this look like a legit contest, you know? But there's not a lot of selling. He's just going through the motions. And then, you said Mankind comes out.
Well, Undertaker, they go to the outside. Undertaker pulls back the mats on the floor like he's going to do something. Yeah. And Mankind runs out at this point, runs around the ring, and trips over the mats, falls flat on his face. And eventually reaches over and grabs Undertaker's leg and tries to pull him down. I mean, this was just classic botchamania there. That was hilarious.
Yeah. he face plants, and then but luckily he like reaches Undertaker's shoe to like, you know, he falls like on his shoe so he can at least kind of sell it like he's crazy. Right. It works for him. If he was a face, he would look like an idiot, but he's a heel, so it's fine. So, and he does. Paul Bearer does hit Undertaker in the back with the urn again in this match. So, you know. Then there's an awful head slam onto the table by Terry Gordy. He tries to hit Undertaker, head on the table, and man, it looks rough. And I just wrote, man, this is rough. Like, it's really hard to watch. Like,
it is.
Because you know who Terry Gordy is, you know, and how great he used to be. But yeah, that Mankind flop is hilarious. And then there's a double clothesline in the ring, you know, the double down spot, and Undertaker sits up, and he's fighting the handicap match. Like you said, at this point, he's fighting both them off, and there they go up the aisleway toward the In Your House set. And I'm glad that this finally comes into play. You know, this set has been here, and we haven't seen it like touched really. I mean, they got near it with the Buried Alive stuff, but here it comes into play. So pretty cool.
They go up to it, and Undertaker ends up throwing Mankind through the In Your House window. And then they go back out the other end through the In Your House door. And it's really fun. Different. Wakes the crowd up, for sure.
It does. And JR says they're tearing the house down. you know he wrote that down and was waiting to use it. Like, you know.
They went through the door and...
So good. Yeah, they go into the outdoor. Yeah, but again, yeah, it comes into play. The crowd kind of pops for that because there's nothing else to pop for.
So at this point,
Undertaker brings Executioner back to the ring.
Yeah, it's all fine and dandy at this point. You know, basically a handicap match. And here's where it gets weird. Okay, it's supposed to be no DQ, no count out, falls count anywhere, all that stuff. And at this point, a bunch of security goofs come out.
J-Brones, man.
Yeah. They come out and start spraying mace at Mankind. I just put WTF in my notes. Yeah. Why? What is happening?
I have no idea. Yeah, they got Zubaz and like green security shirts on, and there's all these J-Brones in the backstage.
No way that's an official security uniform.
Yeah. And it is West Palm Beach, right?
Maybe.
So who knows? Could be. Anyway, but yeah, at what point are these guys carrying mace? But that's one of the commentators like, that's mace, I can smell it. I'm like, well then your nose should be running, like if you can smell it. So yeah, they're starting to mace Mankind, and I wrote why? It's no DQ. Like
exactly.
There's no disqualification. Like at what point? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense because it's not like Undertaker and him are going to have a straitjacket match or anything, because eventually these J-Brones wind up putting Mankind in a straitjacket here.
And thinking, I guess they just kind of did this to do something in the arena, because for a few minutes Undertaker and Executioner go outside the arena and there's no big video wall back in the day. So they can't show what's happening with them. So maybe they just did this to keep the crowd into it for a few minutes. Mankind is just selling, being put in a straitjacket and running around. That's the only thing I can think of. It is cool looking.
Yeah, it's a cool visual. But, like, again, why? Like, at what point does security need a straitjacket? It's not an asylum. Like, this is not the World Wrestling Asylum. It's World Wrestling Federation.
You just interfered in the match.
Exactly.
Paul Bearer is just, like, standing around watching them do it. Like, he's not trying to stop them or anything. He's just standing in the corner watching. It's just...
Yeah, it's weird.
Bizarre.
But, yeah, back outside the ring and outside the arena, your camera cuts outside and it shows the Executioner like a cartoon. He rolls down the embankment into the whatever the body of water is there. But it's like a Scooby-Doo cartoon. He just rolls down...
I mean, this is WCW level camera work,
because
we don't see Undertaker throw him down there. It's super dark, really, really far away. It's just so poorly done. It's a cool idea,
because
I guess there's like a little creek or basin or something right next to the arena, so it's cool that they used it. And they do like they show him going out of the arena, and then all these kids follow them and run out of the building behind them. It was really fun, but they just. Cut back to Mankind, and then they cut back outside, and he's already fallen down the hill, and
yeah.
You can hardly see it.
Exactly. You hardly see it. It's dark. He's rolling down the embankment. But again, what I want to mention about him not selling, he lands in the water, and he just stands up and walks out. Like, he doesn't sell, like, the shock of it, or that he's injured. He just kind of stands up in the, like, ankle-deep water or whatever, waist-deep, and just walks out. It's just kind of like, man, like, what a missed opportunity to sell for the Undertaker there, you know? Again, he was going through some stuff at this time, I guess. We'll have to write it off to that. But it could have been just those little nuances, take something, a neat visual, and make it even better, you know? But
I remember seeing the pictures of this in the WWF magazine back in the day. And this, I don't know. I guess it came out on video somewhere, on Coliseum Video. But the video stores in Augusta never had this pay-per-view. Video to go.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't carry in your house its time for some reason. So this was literally my first time ever seeing this match.
Oh, wow.
I remember as a kid seeing the pictures in the magazine, seeing him fight outside the arena. I thought, oh, that sounds really cool. I really want to see that. And yeah, like you just said, it was disappointing. It could have been a lot cooler.
Yeah, it could have, you know. And yeah, at this point, Undertaker's making his way back into the ring. And I think Mankind's been taken away by the asylum officials. Taken to... I don't know where the padded cell or something, and
well, Undertaker knocks him out as he comes back in the arena.
Oh yeah, yeah,
he knocks
Mankind
down.
That's right. My bad. I forgot about that.
But they have really poor camera work for that too. It's just it can
turn down. Yeah, a lot of times we've been harping on how good the production has been for a lot of this stuff, but these last few episodes, they missed some things. They missed that. Just this is an off night for everybody. It's just this card looks like it's cursed. You know, Vader couldn't even be at it. It's named after him. It's just it screwed everything up. So, but then Executioner makes his way back in the ring, and he has zero offense once he gets back in the ring. There was something in that water that he got thrown in.
Well, and Undertaker just says he's done with this when they get back in the ring, pretty much. He clotheslines him, gets him up for this tombstone.
And there's water dripping out of his boots, dripping out of Executioner's boots. It's really cool
it was to see. Cool.
It's funny, yeah. It's hilarious.
And he gets the pin right there, the first pin.
Yep.
Okay, so remember the rules of this match. They've built it up. There's going to be multiple falls because there's going to be a 1-2-3 count, and then the wrestler's going to have a chance to answer the 10 count. And when they do, the match is going to continue, and it's going to keep going on. It's going to be a last man standing rule. It's going to be lots of exciting action here. So I'm sitting here watching it. Executioner gets pinned. Referee starts counting to 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Executioner down for the count immediately.
Down for the 13 count, man. It's, golly, it's
why? Why even do this stipulation, man?
Right. You know, and I was want to have a couple comments here, too, because, like, so, okay, Undertaker gives him the tombstone. He gets the three count, right?
Right.
Crowd pops because we're used to that. You get the three count, it's over. You know, or you're used to last man standing where they have to beat the count up. You know, you're not used to the mixing of both. So the crowd pops like, yeah, you won. But then the ref kind of looks around and Undertaker, like, you can see him like motioning to him like count. He's like, it's not over yet. And so the referee, I don't remember who it was, Corderis maybe, but anyway, he starts counting to 10. But you can see Undertaker like nudging him, like, it's time to count it, you know, like, this match isn't over yet. And then he does. But yeah, it's just so, there's no drama. There's no false finishes. Even in a match I don't like is a flag match. But there's drama with that. As bad as John Cena and Rusev's match was last year, flag, it had drama. It had quote unquote false finishes of them almost getting the flag there, or even like a so and so on a pole match. You get the drama of them almost getting the thing off the pole, or even like a last man standing. You get somebody makes it back up to their feet by the 8 count.
Yeah,
there's none of that in this match. It's a bunch of gaga, a bunch of outside stuff, a straight jacket. I mean, there's plenty of nonsense, but there's no, like, false finishes, you know? There's nothing to sell that drama to the fans. I wonder if they just called an audible and said, screw it, count to 10. You know?
I don't know if they got cut for time or if Undertaker just decided, I'm not going to let him get any kind of pinfall on me. I don't know. It's a waste of the stipulation.
No Asiatic spike.
No spike.
No even attempt at it. You know, why build it up for 2 weeks in his matches, go off the air on Raw Monday, and you don't even have a tease where he holds the thumb out like the bar or whatever. You know, he doesn't even hold it out like he's going to go for it. Undertaker ducks it or anything. Like, there's no drama there, and there's no heat for the executioner. He gets no heat on Undertaker. I don't know. It's weird. Like, we sound like we're crapping on this match.
Well, yeah, it's a disappointment.
But, like, it's disappointing because we've seen so many good things, and we are passionate about this character, Undertaker, and the story has been told. But yeah, it's just, this is really a dud, and it's just a missed opportunity all around.
And it's a shame
on the booking of it
to end this feud with Mankind and Paul Bearer this way.
Exactly.
Undertaker does the throat slash. Paul Bearer runs away, and Mr. Man wraps it up, saying one day the Undertaker will get his hands on Paul Bearer, and we'll be left to see that on another day. But this will wrap it up. For this one, it pretty much wraps it up for the Executioner in the WWE. He has a match on Superstars against Goldust in the middle of January, and it's brutal, 10-minute match, but Goldust wins, and Paul Bearer gets in the ring and slams the urn on top of the Executioner's head to kind of write off the Executioner and end their alignment. So it just goes to show you how disappointing the Executioner was in that. You know, we've already watched the Royal Rumble match, you and I have, and they're, like, having to reuse all sorts of guys and bringing all these guys from Mexico. They could have thrown Executioner in there, but they clearly were just done with him. You know, they needed guys at this point, but they didn't need this guy.
They didn't need him that bad, So, which, again, it's like he's got a great legacy. You hate to see his legacy end like this, you know. I'm glad he's in the Hall of Fame with the Freebirds and stuff, but, yeah, Terry Gordy is a great wrestler, but just not here, you know, not at this point. Anyway, this match was 11 minutes and 31 seconds. I don't know if I said that earlier. I like to give the times. But, so probably about 4 minutes too long, honestly. This match, if they're going to do no false finishes, no none of that drama for the 10 count, and it could have been 7 minutes probably and been okay. Yeah. Got the same point across, you know.
And, Executioner, if he would have used that big axe that he came out there with, he could have ended this match really
quickly.
Killed
the guy.
Yeah, no DQ.
Exactly.
What are you thinking, man? Why bring that out? Why have a weapon that you can't use? You know,
exactly.
It's silly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Silly.
But that's that, folks. That wraps up 1996 for us. So we've gone through 6 years here now, right?
6 years of The Undertaker through 29 episodes. And, man, we're just getting started. So we would love for you to follow us along on this journey at Talking Taker on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Podbean. Give us a follow, a subscription, a comment, a rating. Let us know how you feel. We love doing this for you guys, for our fellow creatures of the night. We love getting your feedback. We love hearing from you. And I just want to say, I want to talk about 1997 real quick because I'm excited for it. You know, 1996 has been fun. A lot more of the modern stuff that everybody remembers, classic, some of the first really, really classic great in-ring Undertaker encounters in 1996. We've kind of ended in this weird stretch of gimmick matches. I think he's had five gimmick matches in a row to end 1996. We had the Boiler Room Brawl, Final Curtain, Buried Alive, Shark Cage match, and then
Armageddon Rules
match. So it's kind of funny. We're going to get a few more stipulations in 97, but not quite as many. But here's what we have to look forward to in 1997, people. I just wanted you to get excited and stick along with this on this journey because we're going to be getting one of the Undertaker's best matches and WWF's best matches, the Final Four match in your house, February 97. We're going to get Undertaker back on top as the WWF champion for the first time in 6 years. We're going to get the first ever Hell in a Cell match. We're going to get the debut of Kane and that whole storyline that we're going to get to talk about.
Can't wait for that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're going to get to talk about that for months and months. There's a lot of good stuff coming and some bad stuff, too. I know we enjoy talking about the bad stuff, and those are some fun episodes, too. So there is going to be some bad stuff mixed in there, but stick along with us on this journey. And if you haven't been watching the matches along with us, I know you may not have time to do that. 1997, especially if you've never watched the early days of The Undertaker, if you've just started watching wrestling in the past few years, 1997 is the year to jump on board with watching along with us. There's going to be some of The Undertaker's best matches and some of the WWF's best matches in all of their history. So
yeah,
it's going to be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because, again, telling the story of The Undertaker and telling the story of how the wrestling business changes and how he's the cornerstone, too. Again, we've seen him adapt his style. He's updated his look. And, again, we've been dropping names like The Rock. You know, he debuted at last month's pay-per-view, and Stone Cold Steve Austin is clearly a rising star here. Undertaker, again, he's going to be the main event picture. 97 also is going to bring along DX near the end of 97. You know, we're going to get the Montreal Screwjob. We're going to get Steve Austin dropped on his head, which makes him change the way he writes. It's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming in 97. Yeah, 97 is a great year to pick up. I believe 97 is the year when I got back in officially as a fan. I believe that's when you and I, is that when we met?
We can talk about us meeting our friendship beginning.
We get to talk about that.
The most historic moment.
Exactly. This is when I got back into wrestling as a full-time fan. Full, like, on blast, loved it ever since. So I have some fond memories of this next year coming up too. Again, we take the good and the bad and the ugly as well. So we'll take all the crap that comes in between, like this match that we just reviewed. But we encourage you guys to go watch these matches coming up in 97. So and if you were there at this pay-per-view, it's time. We want to know how disappointed you were that Vader was not there, because it's time. It's time. It's Vader time. But he was not there. Maybe he was off filming Baywatch. I don't know. That was before this, wasn't it?
No, he was filming Boy Meets World. What are you talking
oh,
about?
Oh, Boy Meets World. Yeah, could have been. That man. We can talk about that later, too. Anyway, if you were there at West Palm Beach, if you were one of these people in the arena there, we want to know. We still haven't had anyone take us up on that. We're looking forward to that. So follow us on all those things Alex said. Any other shout-outs or anything?
Nah, man. I think that's it. Let's wrap up 96.
All right, let's wrap it up, put a bow on it, put it under the Christmas tree. It's a lump of coal. Spoiler alert. Take her easy.
Speaking of the, oh, wait a minute, what's this? The Asian spike coming at you, perhaps? Oh!